I'm here today to talk about distribution watermarking. I'll explain more about what that actually is. So first of all, my name is Harry Toda. I'm with Nagra. So Nagra is a company you may or may not know. So we mainly provide pay TV security, so conditional access, DRM, things like that. So for about 500 pay TV operators across the world, so number one in terms of market share. In the US, we do, for instance, the pay TV security for Dish Network. It's one of our high-profile customers. So I'm originally from a company called NexGuard. So my company is the market leader for watermarking, and we were acquired by Nagra in 2016. So watermarking was seen as another valuable tool to provide to, for instance, the pay TV operators, but also to content owners. And as we all know, I mean, there's a lot of vertical integration nowadays. Pay TV operators developing their own content, and also, of course, content owners going direct to consumers. So with this vertical integration, so we was thought that NexGuard could provide a good value to Nagra. Again, today we talk about distribution watermarking. Let me see, how do I do this? I don't think there's anything else than I have to try and... Okay, find the small button. Okay, so I'll talk a bit about piracy trends and also especially how they affect sports and sports rights holders. Then what the response of those sports rights holders is. Then we come to one of the responses that they have, that is watermarking. So we talk about distribution watermarking for linear channels. And again, linear, say, hey, why is there still linear channels? Well, sports is, of course, a big reason, right, where live and linear channels are still very, very popular. Then we talk about the other thing, maybe more relevant for Hollywood, so distribution watermarking for file assets. So then what do you actually do with it? So the statistics you can get from distribution watermarking and what you do with that. Then let's say a little bit about watermarking, sort of session-based or subscriber-level watermarking for live OTT services, and then some company references. Okay, piracy trends. So there's a couple of quotes I have here. So if you start on the top right, so this is a statement from a research from FACT. So that's a UK-based anti-piracy organization. So they've calculated that the UK industry lost about £9 billion over the last 2 years per year. And then they estimate that, the UK public bought around 1 million illegal set-top boxes. And again, in the UK, if you know the environment, this is very much about sports and about soccer. In Europe, there's only one sport, really, and that's soccer. So consumers bought around 1 million illegal set-top boxes and mainly to watch soccer.
Yeah, quick question. Are these pay TV provided set-top boxes, or are we talking Android, OTT types?
Well, so it's illegal set-top boxes. So it's boxes that typically are bought on the market somewhere.
Like a Kodi box or a Kodi-enabled box?
It can be Kodi, okay. Yes, but it doesn't necessarily have to be Kodi. And I would say that 99.9% of the people wouldn't even know what Kodi is, but the box comes pre-configured with everything. Yeah. And it comes pre-configured with the right Sky and BT channels that you can actually watch the English Premier League, right? Because that's what it's all about. So here is a quote from the Interactive Advertising Bureau saying that in the US alone, companies lose over $2.4 billion every year. And this is the Advertising Bureau, so this is really about lost advertising revenue. Right? So it's not only lost subscription, but also lost advertising revenue. So the other quotes are, I mean, there's one from Spain, and again, this is about soccer, football, so 271 million euros lost in 2016 alone due to piracy, especially in countries like Spain and Portugal. This has come to the point where basically people say, hey, I mean, all of their neighbors have bought an illegal box, so why are you still paying, right? So in especially in those countries, it's become a very big problem. And also we see that a lot of actions have been taken recently. The other one here is a quote from the CEO of Foxtel. So this was actually, reacting to something that happened last year where a big a big boxing game, boxing fight was actually live streamed over Facebook. So that immediately, this was pay-per-view, so this immediately made them lose a lot of revenue. So that really came to the attention also of the CEO of Foxtel. And again, on the right side, on the bottom in Asia, you wouldn't be surprised that also there, the losses on from piracy in Asia are very, very severe. So maybe a few things, I think, if you look at these trends, I would say, first of all, it's maybe 10 years ago, piracy was about music, then it was about, let's say, movies and TV. But I would say the last few years, sports has become very, very important in terms of piracy and anti-piracy. Yeah. And this has, I'll come back to that, also has a bit to do with technology. Yeah. So this is a graph from Digital TV Research, where basically they estimate that over the period for 2016 to 2022, that the losses to piracy will amount to something like 51 billion worldwide. So the good thing is that if you look at the legitimate revenues, they're actually growing faster than the piracy revenues. So that's a good sign. And I guess that there's a couple of factors there at stake as well. And one of this very clearly, you could say that the industry has reacted, not only with very active anti-piracy, but also change of business models. You can think about, let's say, the all-you-can-eat, like Netflix and Amazon and Hulu are offering. And that helps a lot because it gives people value for money and less reason to pirate. Also, basically, let's say release windows. In fact, that of course, if content is not available, then it'll be pirated easily. So, I think that the industry has done. And don't think that's only, let's say, a US or even European trend. Especially in Asia as well. If you look at countries like China and India. In fact, they've done a lot. There are, I would say, many, many Netflixes in those countries. If you look at China, iQIYI, Tencent, Alibaba, Youku. I was in a film forum earlier this year in August in Beijing, and the industry representative said that actually in China piracy has gone down quite a bit in the last couple of years. They say in the last 5 years, and that's especially to do with the fact that a lot of the content is actually available legitimately and at the right price point and easy for people to access. So definitely, there have been good developments and we're not losing the fight against piracy, but we're also not really winning it in the sense that the losses are still increasing. So the next, graphs are, these are questions that on the Niagara side, we have this, what we call the TVIF, so it's a forum where we talk to a lot of our customers, generally pay TV operators, ask them a lot of questions. So we do a lot of research and we ask executives of our customers, where do you think the biggest threat comes from in the coming years? So first of all, they do see that piracy will increase the pressure on their industry. And again, this may have a lot to do with sports. But then if you see where they see the threat coming from, you see that this is on the bottom, you see signal piracy. I would say 10 years ago, piracy was almost only about signal piracy. And this is about, where a smart card can be hacked or control words can be shared in a traditional pay TV operation. And nowadays with OTT, it can be, theft of credentials and things like that. So basically, you're stealing the signal. So that's still a problem, but I would say much less of requiring attention of our customers. Recording on screen used to be a big thing. It is still for first run movies definitely, because of the fact that it's so early, you can even a bad copy can give a lot of damage. But of course, if you look at it down the line, pirate consumers are not satisfied with a screen copy anymore, so that's why it's also a little bit less of an issue. Same for pirated discs. Pirate consumers don't want to go through the effort of actually driving to a store and buying something, and picking up something. I think that's gone down a lot. Even peer-to-peer I wouldn't say it's gone down, but it gets less attention in terms of of, let's say, a threat that's growing, because what's really growing are the two top ones. So we talk about IPTV piracy via pirate boxes and things like that. For instance, Kodi, which can run on, for instance, on an Amazon Fire TV stick and so on. So that's a big threat. And indeed, I mean, also for our customers, which are often also, let's say, traditional pay TV operators, in a way, that's their competition. I mean, they provide set-up boxes, but people can also get a legitimate box, and it can be with a one-time fee or a very low fee per month. You can watch everything that you can watch through a let's say legitimate service. And here, I mean, Nagra is quite active, so we have an ongoing case against a company called Kotek. So this is a Chinese company that has a lot of different brands, but I mean, tens and tens of different brands. And some of them actually are for legitimate pay TV operators, but a lot of them are actually provided with some playlists and links, and basically they drive the pirate ecosystem, you could say. So I mean, so Nagra actually started the lawsuit against them last year, and you could actually check, there was even a US Supreme Court judgment last month, or it was in October, I think, end of October, and so you can look it up, Nagra versus Kotek. So where there was a judgment in this case for us, so we are fighting, let's say, this kind of IPTV piracy, pirate box providers. And then the top is online streaming, where, I mean, it may not even require a box. I mean, indeed, it may be a playlist which you can run on your existing box or smart TV. And in a way, I mean, that shows, I mean, consumers are lazy. They don't even want to go out and buy a box. If they can just get it and load something on their smart TV and they can watch whatever they want, of course, that's the biggest threat. And here you also see, let's say, why this is becoming such a big issue. And also for sports, maybe a couple of years ago, it wasn't really possible yet to do this kind of live streaming with reliable, good quality. So live is still different from let's say, indeed, just streaming a movie on demand. So live is important. I mean, at that moment when the, for instance, an English Premier game is on, where indeed hundreds of thousands or even millions of people may tune in, I mean, to this particular stream. So to still have a reasonable quality and let's say not too much lag or buffering or delay, I mean, that's important. And actually pirates have come to this point that they can do this. And there's a whole ecosystem of gray, you could say gray suppliers. The big CDNs won't do this, but there are smaller CDNs that will work with pirates. And let's say there are software that you can actually download from some company in Eastern Europe, and it basically is a complete toolbox to provide a streaming platform that can also do live streaming. And so the technology has moved a lot, and that's been become a big threat.
So I'm confused by this slide. Is this the perception of executives? This isn't
yes.
The reality.
This is the perception, yes. Yeah. It's, I mean, you can see it in the, I think Mesa will distribute the copy, so you can see actually it's very small, it's small thing to see here, but so it says, this was question number two, in your opinion, the executives, how big a challenge are the following types of content piracy to pay TV business in your country?
But do you have the reality of what is the reality of the...
I mean, it's, I don't have that handy, no.
Okay.
We have more data, but okay, actually it says that here, indeed. Okay, sorry, I'm going on too far. Indeed, so this is English Premier League. So here we could see for the first time maybe in 2018 where it was thought that Premier League football would actually, in terms of their revenue from broadcast rights, it would, let's say, break the £10 billion barrier for the first time. But in fact, if you look at Sky, where they got, let's say, most of the rights in the UK, the amount of money where they acquired the rights for actually went down a bit. So this may have to do with the fact UK is a very special market. I mean, it is actually very expensive for a consumer to see all the games. And I mean, because of that, there's more piracy, and we actually saw that that the rights value slipped by 13% this year. So again, I mean, sports rights holders, they are starting to see the challenge. So what do they do? So one of the things which we see, and I would say that maybe this is where the sports rights holders are, you could say, finally taking the example of Hollywood. So in Hollywood, there was something like Movie Labs for a long time already, where Movie Labs basically had a spec, had to say, okay, I mean, let's say, which was used by the studios to say, hey, I mean, this is what you need to do. I mean, you are a licensee, you're going to broadcast or distribute our movies. So this is what you do in terms have to do in terms of security to be able to get the license. So sports rights holders so far did not really do that, but now I think we are really starting to see that. So especially some of the world's top leagues, and I think it's clear mentioned one. So they've started to publish security requirements, and I mean they can be quite extensive. So with all kinds of operational security measures, how you handle credentials, requirements for conditional access, DRM, hardening, and so on, but also watermarking. So a number of sports rights holders, they've now, let's say, put in their requirements for licensees that they have to do watermarking. And some of them, indeed, they mentioned the two types of watermarking. One is distribution watermarking. So that's basically for channel providers to identify, let's say, from which licensee the piracy actually originated. But I'll come back to that. And then the other is a session-based watermark. So this is really done by the direct consumer or the operators that address consumers, so that they can actually identify a consumer that restreams the content. Okay, so I'll tell you a little bit more about distribution watermarking for linear channels. Seems that I have to move on a bit faster. So first of all, watermarking, but it'll be fast. Watermarking, involves the embedding of a unique mark inside video, mostly, and which will make each copy unique. So afterwards, you distribute the copy, but if you distribute to 10 people, you distribute 10 unique copies, which can be identified later. And there's on the right side, there's basically two parameters that are essential. One is imperceptibility, so you don't want this to be seen. The mark has to be in the video, but it shouldn't be seen. First of all, because it's annoying for a viewer, but secondly, because if it's visible, then it's a target. It provides a target for hackers. And secondly, the second parameter is that the watermarking has to be robust, in a sense that whatever you do to the video, the watermark should still be, let's say, retrievable. Because if it's not, then of course that defeats the purpose. Move a bit faster. So here we talk about, let's say, linear distribution watermarking. So that's distribution watermarking again for linear channels. So in our business, we call that network ID. So if you have, this is just a workflow, let's say a distribution chain, where there may be an event here that you are covering. I'll move one faster. So everywhere where you see the blue square, that's where a watermark can be inserted. So it can be inserted if you, let's say, have different ways to distribute from the event. But mainly it's here where you, let's say, for instance, if this could be English Premier League game, this could be Sky Sports. So Sky Sports is then provided to a number of licensees. And let's say for every feed that they provide to a licensee, they will mark it with a different mark. So then afterwards they will be able to find, okay, which of the licensee actually caused the piracy. And then of course in the end, when you go to consumers, you can also watermark. So this is really a watermark that's applied to a linear channel. So how can this be implemented? And here what we've done is basically said, hey, of course it's easy to prescribe something, but we didn't really want to do that. What we want to do is make sure that, let's say, the equipment, the kind of product that our customers are already using in terms of distributing their channel, this is basically just, I mean, there's a sort of a plug-in that does the watermarking. So it means that our customers don't need to change their equipment. They just need to basically, I mean, add some software. And that's, for that reason, we've worked with a number of players in this field. For instance, if you look at satellite, one-to-many B2B distribution, so network ID can be implemented in the commercial IRD. At commercial IRD, for instance, if you look at the US, a channel will be distributed to a few thousand head ends in the US. So those head ends have commercial IRDs, and the commercial IRD will then apply a watermark. And then if the signal is pirated from there, you would know which head end it's pirated from. And for that, we are working together on IREs with ATEM, ARIS, and Ericsson. So they've already implemented basically this network ID watermarking in their products. You can also do it on the encoder, on the encoder side. If it's encoded for different licensees, then again, there's a plugin available and supported by Harmonic, ATEM, and Ericsson. And if you do, let's say, SDI baseband type of distribution, then our plugin basically is supported by companies like Crystal Vision and Evion. So we work with a number of partners to make it quite easy to deploy, but also to make sure that because of course this is broadcast, so it has to be secure, there has to be redundancy, so all of that basically is not affected by the fact that you watermark it. So here, I mean, just an example where it's in a commercial IRD. So this is basically, if you look at the workflow in the IRD, let's say the watermark is applied between the decode and a transcode. And then basically, it's just, for instance, it's called the UA number or the IRD serial number. So basically, a watermark is applied. But I guess you'll believe that. So that was for linear channels, again, for especially for sports, but not only for sports. If you look at for file assets, so this is the business that we've been in for very long. So basically, watermark is applied in production, in post-production. Also here, it's done a lot, for instance, with localization, with different languages and so on. So you want to make sure, and I think that was also discussed earlier today, when maybe a copy is localized somewhere, that doesn't lead to leaking. So if you do watermarking, then of course, I mean, your localization partner will know, hey, I mean, if I leak it, then I'll be in trouble. So here we talk about the B2B distribution. And again, so this can be, for instance, if a studio would distribute maybe a movie or a package of movies to many, many different licensees. And this can be from iTunes in Korea or let's say a distributor in China, or it can be many, many different kinds of OTT systems, on-demand systems. So basically every copy can then be watermarked with a different mark. So here, again, I mean, I can't give all the details, but for NextGuard Niagara, we basically have a lot of different ways to do that, a lot of different implementations. So we would ask first, okay, what's your workflow? And then we'll advise you the best way to basically do this kind of distribution watermarking for file assets. So one of the ways which is very popular is to do it in a transcoder plugin. If anyway, before you distribute the file asset, it has to be transcoded, then you can do the watermark at that point and make sure that everybody gets a unique copy. Okay, so the next, I'll skip this, I think we're running out of time. So here, this is a file distribution. For instance, we can also integrate it with Aspera. Okay, so what can you actually do with a distribution watermark? So maybe that's one of the most important slides. So what can you do? For instance, distribution watermarking allows you to trace which distribution path, which platform, licensee platform, which affiliate is the most significant source of piracy. So first of all, it can help, for instance, to fix some issues. For a certain platform may have a security issue. So of course you know where it is, so you can tell your licensee, hey, you need to fix this. So it also enables you to target anti-piracy budgets where they have the most impact. If you say, hey, the problem is really here, then anti-piracy efforts can focus on that. Especially for file assets, it will enable the optimization of release windows. So you can really measure, okay, if you release something earlier, an early release window, but you see that leads to a lot of piracy, okay, then you say, well, let's tune it back a bit, let's do it 2 weeks later. So this kind of optimization is very important. And I mean, distribution watermarking then allows you to, let's say, use that kind of big data to optimize your release windows. And then, of course, it also provides proof of ownership. Because it's your watermark, then you can basically say, see, this is my watermark, and this is a proof of ownership of content. So, I mean, we've used this already in legal cases. But also, for instance, for takedown on social media, you can use that as well. So this is an example. Unfortunately, I can't really use very new examples. I mean, this is quite sensitive. So I'm actually using a data that was provided by Fox publicly, a while back. So this was really, let's say the kind of analysis that they did for let's say to look at a certain movie title. It's a little bit old, right? It's Kingsman, but it doesn't matter. So basically, using this kind of distribution watermarking, they were able to really see where piracy comes from. So maybe difficult to see here, but this is the blue line here. That's camcording. So camcording again. That's from the movie screen in the theater. So this comes very early. So you see that immediately from the release, you have piracy from this movie. Let's say the theater, but low quality, which is good. Then the yellow line here, or the big peak, where they did some super premium, what they call super premium VOD release. So the moment they did it, they also saw a peak in the piracy coming up. And then this one, I can't really say, this was digital HD, with dark blue, and this was the peak basically for Blu-ray. So also looking at different countries and so on, so they can see, of course they can do much more detailed analysis country by country and so on, so they can see basically what kind of release window would trigger what kind of piracy effect. And then they can just move the windows to make sure that they maximize the revenue. So that's, I think we are running out of time. Maybe I'll do a last few slides just to pitch Nagra a little bit. So we've been in anti-piracy for about 20 years. So we do more than 700 forensic analysis. We monitor on the daily about 2,000 piracy sites and about 120 employees. And these are some of the customers that we serve with watermarking at the big studios. These are pay TV watermarking clients. And these are some of our anti-piracy services clients. Adish I already mentioned, but Bundesliga, we work with NBA as well. Yeah. And that's it.
Sorry, Gary. Thank you, Gary. Thank you so much. Our last session will be Amazon Web Services. We'll start up here.